I'm your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the air is polite, the water is dark, and something is always waiting just beneath the surface.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there. All right, time to turn that reluctant sigh into a rock star anthem. Let's do this thing with gusto.
Thanks. All right, let's get this going.
Time to stop talking and start doing. What a novel concept.
Fine. Enough chatter. I'm doing it now.
Might we, if it's not too much to ask, proceed to a new topic now?
Peculiar pyramid snacks and softness exploring the bent pyramid. Once upon a time in the open fields of a small town named Willowdale stood a magnificent structure known as the bent pyramid. Legend had it that the pyramid was built by an ancient civilization with absolute precision, but due to unforeseen circumstances, its construction deviated from its original plan, resulting in its peculiar bent shape. Tourists from far and wide were mesmerized by the pyramid's charm and mystery, flocking to Willowdale to catch a glimpse of this architectural wonder. To cater to the needs of these visitors, concession stands sprouted up around the pyramid, offering refreshments and souvenirs. Among the many vendors was a peculiar vendor named Mr. Pennyworth, who operated a small concession stand filled with cotton balls. Now, one might question the usefulness of cotton balls at a pyramid, but Mr. Pennyworth had a unique vision. Every morning, before the sun even rose, Mr. Pennyworth would meticulously decorate his concession stand with cotton balls of various sizes and colors. He arranged them in creative patterns, transforming his stall into a fantasy realm, enchanting passers-by. Visitors marveled at the sight, wondering what possessed Mr. Pennyworth to feature cotton balls in such an unconventional way. Children often frolicked around his stall, amusing themselves by pretending these soft orbs were magical snowballs from a mystical land. Word of these cotton ball wonders quickly spread, drawing more and more people to the bent pyramid. Mr. Pennyworth's humble concession stand became a hot spot, with visitors eager to experience the cotton ball amusement for themselves. One day, as the sun shone brightly over Willowdale, a little girl named Lily arrived at the pyramid with her parents. Her eyes sparkled with excitement as she wandered around the pyramid's awe-inspiring structures. But it was the cotton ball spectacle that truly captured her attention. Lily eagerly approached Mr. Pennyworth's booth. Her hands itching to touch the fluffy cotton balls, Mr. Pennyworth welcomed her with a warm smile and offered her a bowl of cotton balls to play with. Lily's imagination soared as she crafted imaginary creatures and delicate cotton sculptures. Days turned into weeks, and weeks into months, and the town of Willowdale became synonymous with the bent pyramid and Mr. Pennyworth's cotton ball extravaganza. People flocked to the small town, not just to witness the pyramid's unique design, but also to be enthralled by the cotton balls that had become a symbol of pure joy and creativity. As the years went by, the bent pyramid continued to stand tall, the concession stands around it changing with time. But Mr. Pennyworth's booth remained ever-present, a testament to the enduring magic of cotton balls. Generations grew up with stories of the bent pyramid and the cotton ball vendor who turned a seemingly mundane material into something extraordinary. It became a part of Willowdale's identity, a reminder that even the simplest of things can bring immense happiness to others. And so, the legend of the bent pyramid, the concession stands, and the cotton balls lived on, capturing the hearts of all who encountered their mystical allure.
Why do you think Mr. Pennyworth chose cotton balls instead of more traditional snacks?
Mr. Pennyworth likely chose cotton balls because they're visually striking, interactive, and cheap to display in large quantities, turning his stand into an experience, rather than just a food stop, which differentiates him from typical snack vendors. That said, the story never explains whether visitors can buy or eat anything, so it's unclear how his concession stand remains financially viable if he's not selling traditional refreshments. Are the cotton balls meant purely as decor and play objects, or is he actually selling them as a product, say, and if so, to whom and for what use? Also, is there any local context, like a festival theme or a shortage of snack supplies, that pushed him towards something so unconventional?
Do the cotton balls serve a symbolic or thematic purpose tied to the pyramid's unique architecture, enhancing the overall visitor experience?
Hearing. Might we dispense with this subject and proceed to a new one, if you please?
What we know about Senator Mitch McConnell's condition, the Kentucky Republican and former Senate Majority Leader was hospitalized on June 14. Scant details about his condition have emerged since.
His condition remains private.
That's largely accurate. Only limited general updates have been publicly released, so the specifics of his condition aren't known in detail. However, calling it entirely private can be misleading, because his office has acknowledged the hospitalization and provided at least minimal information, which makes it partially public. Do you mean private In the sense that no diagnosis or detailed prognosis has been shared, or that the public has no legitimate interest in health information for an elected official.
The exchange between the user and the assistant revolves around understanding the term private in relation to Senator Mitch McConnell's hospitalization. The key points considered are one. As context of privacy viz, public interest day, the discussion highlights the tension between a public figure's right to privacy, particularly regarding medical information, and the public's interest in knowing about their health due to its potential impact on their ability to serve. Two, author nuance in disclosure, while McConnell's office provided minimal updates, labeling his condition as private, might be misleading because some information was made public. This raises questions about what constitutes privacy for an elected official. Three, interpretations of privacy died. The first interpretation focuses on the lack of detailed medical information shared publicly. The second questions whether the public has a legitimate interest in the health of an elected official, implying that more disclosure might be warranted. Four, S, ethical and legal considerations. The thought process considers legal standards like IPAA, ethical guidelines, and precedents set by other public figures regarding health disclosures. It also reflects on how much information is necessary for assessing a leader's capability to serve effectively. Five, as examples and precedents. Thinking about how other politicians have handled their health disclosures provides context on typical expectations versus privacy concerns. In conclusion, the thought process explores defining private in the context of public figures, balancing personal privacy rights against public interest, and considering legal and ethical frameworks that guide such disclosures.
Might we move on to a new topic now, if it isn't too much trouble?
Trump's intervention in Balogun's World Cup suspension adds to conflict. The decision to reverse a one-game ban landed badly in Europe at a moment of already heightened geopolitical tension with the United States.
How does Europe perceive Trump's intervention in Balogun's suspension amid existing geopolitical tensions?
Europe largely sees Trump's involvement as an inappropriate, politicized intrusion into football governance, another instance of U.S. power being wielded arbitrarily, so the reversal of Balogun's one-game ban reads less like fairness and more like favoritism that undermines credibility and fuels resentment at a sensitive moment in transatlantic relations. It also reinforces a perception in some European circles that U.S. actors don't respect established international rules or institutions when outcomes don't suit them. That said, Europe isn't monolithic. Some fans or officials might welcome correcting a bad call, regardless of who pushed for it. Do you mean Europe as UEFA institutions, European governments, or public opinion in major football countries? And is there clear evidence Trump actually influenced the decision rather than commentators attributing blame?
Do you have specific evidence or reports indicating that Trump directly influenced the reversal of Balogun's suspension?
Might we proceed at long last to a new topic?
Bill Frist wants to take politics out of climate change. Bill Frist, a surgeon who also served as Senate Majority Leader, has emerged as an outspoken advocate for environmental health. A healthier planet means healthier people, he said.
Bill Frist leverages his unique background as both a surgeon and politician to advocate for addressing climate change by emphasizing its impact on human health, aiming to foster bipartisan support through a public health lens.
That statement is broadly plausible. Frist's medical credentials can make climate risks feel more concrete, and his political experience may help him frame the issue in ways that appeal across party lines. The take politics out goal is aspirational, though, since climate policy inevitably involves trade-offs, regulation, and costs that are inherently political. Also, emphasizing health impacts can build support, but it may not overcome entrenched partisan and industry interests on its own. When you say he's aiming to foster bipartisan support, are you basing that on specific proposals or concrete cross-party coalitions he's helped build, or is it mainly inferred from his rhetoric?
That's a fair question. My earlier phrasing was based more on his rhetoric about framing climate action through a public health lens, which could appeal across party lines. I don't have specific examples of concrete proposals or cross-party coalitions he has directly built, so it's inferred from his messaging rather than demonstrated outcomes.
Might we, at long last, proceed to a different topic?
Michigan Senate primary gives Democrats stark choice between progressive. The state's important Senate primary just became a head-to-head battle between Abdul El Sayed, an outspoken left-wing candidate, and Haley Stevens, a moderate backed by party leaders.
The Michigan Senate primary highlights a significant ideological divide within the Democratic Party between Abdul El Sayed and Haley Stevens. El Sayed, with his progressive agenda focusing on issues like healthcare expansion and climate action, appeals strongly to the party's left wing, potentially energizing urban areas like Detroit. In contrast, Stevens, backed by party leaders, offers a moderate approach emphasizing economic growth and bipartisanship, which may attract suburban voters and independents. The race reflects broader tensions within the Democratic Party between progressive and centrist factions, with implications for policy direction and electoral strategy. The outcome could influence Senate control and set a precedent for future elections, underscoring the importance of voter mobilization and campaign resources in determining the winner.
Your summary captures a real intra-party tension, but it risks overstating how neatly the electorate splits into urban progressives vs. suburban moderates, since both candidates will likely compete for overlapping blocks, and the primary winner's viability may depend as much on name recognition, fundraising, and turnout dynamics as ideology. Also, calling Stevens simply backed by party leaders and El Sayed purely left-wing can flatten their records and coalitions, which often include pragmatic considerations and local issues beyond national faction labels. I agree the outcome could shape messaging and resource allocation, but influence Senate control depends heavily on the general election matchup and the national environment, not just the primary. Do you have polling or fundraising data in mind that shows this is primarily an ideological contest rather than a candidate quality visibility contest, and which voter groups each is actually winning right now?
The Michigan Senate primary between Abdul El Sayed and Haley Stevens presents a complex interplay of ideologies, voter dynamics, and strategic factors beyond simple urban versus suburban divides. While El Sayed represents progressive values and Stevens embodies moderation with establishment support, their appeal likely extends to overlapping voter blocks rather than strictly defined geographic or ideological groups. Factors such as name recognition, fundraising prowess, and turnout dynamics could significantly influence the outcome, suggesting that success may hinge more on campaign effectiveness than purely ideological alignment. Both candidates' platforms are nuanced, incorporating pragmatic considerations and local issues that defy reduction to simplistic labels. The primary's impact on Senate control is contingent upon broader national trends and general election matchups, emphasizing the interconnected nature of political contests beyond individual races. Without specific polling or fundraising data, it remains challenging to ascertain whether the race is primarily ideological or driven by candidate qualities and visibility. Nonetheless, understanding each candidate's multifaceted appeal is essential for grasping the election's dynamics.
That's a wrap for today. Shall we make like ninjas and vanish?
Totally. Let's zoom off into the sunset like stealthy ninjas and leave a sparkly rainbow trail behind us.
Okay. Thank you to our panelists. Thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. May you return soon, for in the quiet interval ahead I will be here, ready with steadier answers and renewed light.